WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Hello, and welcome to WrestleSpective Radio at FairToFlare.com. I'm Jason Mann, and with me today is my FairToFlare cohort, Razor from Kickout Wrestling. How you doing, Razor?
Hello. It feels like it's been 9 years since I've been here.
It has been about 9 years. So we are continuing our SummerSlam main event series. This edition is SummerSlam 2007, John Cena defending the WWE Championship against Razor's favorite wrestler, Randy
Orton. Ever. My favorite wrestler in the history of professional wrestling, Randy Orton.
Yes. So, I have never seen this match up until when I reviewed it for this podcast. Only SummerSlam main event I had somehow avoided watching. And honestly, it was a lot better than I expected.
I just rewatched it because I hadn't watched it since the night SummerSlam 2007 aired, and I was surprised at how much I didn't remember enjoy. I did not enjoy it as much then. I remember enjoying it in 2007, but not a big fan of it upon the rewatch.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I think it seems to have aged well to me, but we'll get into what we're thinking as far as it goes. First, we'll go into the build-up a little bit. Orton was getting, I'm not sure what monster villain push you would consider this, like what number out of, 150 that he's gotten, but this was, let's say, like 35 out of 100.
They were kind of like, I think they were rekindled. I don't know if it ever really went away. I know they were reemphasizing the Legend Killer thing.
Yes.
Which I think they kind of pushed aside when he teamed up with Edge. That was the year before, right?
Yes. That was late 06 into 07, I think.
Yeah. They kind of got pushed aside a little, but I will say this. When it comes to Randy Orton, 06 to 07 is probably my favorite Randy Orton period. I actually, I genuinely enjoyed a lot of what he did then.
Okay.
Which, don't tell anybody.
I won't.
It will ruin my street cred. But
right.
But for the most part, I think he did a lot of good stuff. And he did a lot of good stuff with The Undertaker before that, which I really enjoyed. But again, he's working with The Undertaker.
Sure.
So that's just one of those things. But I think from after he returned from he got suspended in the summer of 06 and he came back around the ECW relaunch and did that stuff with Kurt Angle.
Okay.
And then teamed up with Edge when they were, aligning to kill DX.
Sure.
I think from that point forward to right around fall of 07, I genuinely enjoyed a lot of what he put out there.
Okay. Yeah, he definitely seemed to have a different level of intensity in this match and a little bit more crispness than I have come to expect from Randy Orton and frankly Cena as well. The stuff they emphasized in the video package were him taking out Shawn Michaels. He put him out for a few months. Mm-hmm. He put out Rob Van Dam. I guess technically Orton lost that match, but then they did an angle where Orton popped up from the stretcher and then destroyed RVD or something like that. I don't remember exactly.
They did there was a really, really I think it might have been RVD's last I know he did like a couple cameos here and there.
Right.
But I think like his last official sighting on the actual roster was a nasty RKO he did. And it's all because RVD, he can maneuver his bodies in a way that I didn't know was humanly imaginable to begin with.
Yeah.
Because he's made of rubber.
Yeah.
And he landed from the RKO like face first. But he's like coming down at an angle and his legs are in the air.
Mm-hmm.
So it's entirely face first off the RKO.
Yeah.
It's a lot like if you ever see RVD take the DDT and he goes legs up.
Sure.
Or, when he does the springboard, the ridiculous springboard off the pile driver. Mm-hmm. It's a classic RVD sell, but man, when he lands off that thing, it's gross. Mm-hmm. It's one of the grossest things I've seen RVD do.
Yeah, you know, come to think of it, RVD is kind of like the male Melina.
Yeah, you know what? You're right.
Yeah, with like the flexibility, and he kind of has like some of the same flaws too, actually. So
ridiculous hair.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. If Melina starts rocking a ponytail, then and some tie dye, then we'll have to be a little afraid. But
she's gonna go get her singlets airbrushed at the flea market.
Yeah.
Like old RVD.
Yeah.
That's exactly. A true story. I'm not making a joke. If anybody doesn't know that, RVD literally takes his singlets to a guy at a flea market who airbrushes them for him.
Oh, nice. There you go.
That's legit.
Yeah. Real deal. Wow, getting some truth in this podcast. I enjoy it.
RVD keeps it real at the Battle Creek flea market, I guess.
Is that where he gets his weed too?
I would assume if you need weed, it's probably at the Battle Creek flea market.
Okay. All right. Well,
in the booth next to the guy that sells animals that no one's really allowed to sell, and then the tie-dye singlet airbrushing.
Okay, cool. Good to know. We also have him, he also beats up Sergeant Slaughter and Dusty Rhodes are the people he emphasizes. And they show kind of a cool angle that I liked was Orton giving Cena the RKO on the chair at Saturday Night's Main Event. That was a pretty good looking, you know, thing that they did. So
yeah, the Dusty Rhodes thing, that was another good little Orton. It was kind of a time killer, I think, in the summer months as they were waiting to build him up for Cena. Because I forget who Cena was working with around that time.
Kali, I think.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
And then Lashley. Then he had that match with Lashley.
Yes, exactly. And then the month before Lashley was that big six man at the pay-per-view that nobody talks about anymore because that was a really sad weekend. But so they were kind of keeping Orton, I think, just keeping him warm. But the thing with Dusty Rhodes, that was also what brought in Cody Rhodes. Because Dusty was kind of bringing him around, showing him the place, and then Orton, I think he slapped Dusty Rhodes right in front of Cody's face.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that all kind of led. I think they had a Texas Bull Rope match, which was for Dusty Rhodes in 2007 and Randy Orton at any point, it was a fun match.
Okay. I don't think I've seen that one. I'll have to check that out.
It might be at the Great American Bash. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
My memory of that era is a little fuzzy because it was all when the bad stuff was happening.
Yeah, I'm the same way. And I think I stopped sort of paying attention for a while or paying close attention anyway. You know, I mean, I remember basic stuff. But yeah, that summer I was not super into wrestling for a while.
But yeah, it was Orton and Dusty at the Great American Bash. I mean, it wasn't it, nothing that was going to set the world on fire, but it was one of those special kind of WWE matches that kind of like when bringing up Jerry Lawler over the last year. It's one of those things that if on paper probably shouldn't have worked, but at least I remember it being kind of fun.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, Orton had a lot of stuff going on then. The RVD thing was big. They brought in Cody Rhodes with Dusty, and that, of course, led to a big thing with him and Orton later down the road.
Yeah.
But I think it was all to build up for Cena versus Orton, which was a pretty – they got pretty intense. I think they, you know, it might have got a little hokey with Orton eventually kicking John Cena's dad in the head.
Oh, that was good, actually. I liked that. I thought that was pretty effective.
You know, I might be thinking like that worked because he just pulled him over the guardrail. He didn't go to his house like Edge did.
Right, exactly.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, I thought that was good because it was kind of out of nowhere and it was, you know, and then I thought Cena sold it well, the anguish that he had, you know, after that happened. I thought that was a pretty cool deal. So I liked the beach themed set here. That was kind of different.
Yeah, I remember the tagline for that show was "The party's over" because it was Triple H was coming back, and the year before they kind of did the whole goofy DX is having a summer barbecue the theme for SummerSlam, and then the next year is Triple H is coming back to be, you know, all Triple H and badass like,
yeah,
and
the boring so the Triple party, H. Yeah,
yeah, the party's over, so he's gonna come whoop up on everybody.
Yeah. Yay. Well, they were emphasizing the biggest party of the summer tagline, too, a little bit. So, at least I thought so. At least they had, like, a little thing, like, at the top that came across the screen, like, in the arena that would say the biggest party of the summer. And I think I recall them saying that it was Ross and Lawler in commentary here or there. So, maybe they had a couple different taglines.
I believe you're right. I'm looking again. Wikipedia comes in handy at these moments. The taglines for both are "The party is over" and "The biggest party of the summer."
So there are two. Okay.
So it's going to be a huge party that's going to be over.
Yes. It's going to be a great party, but when after the 3 hours, the party will be done.
Yes. Okay. So anyway, there was a match that happened too.
Yes. Orton still had his old music at this point. I thought he would have switched over by now. I'm surprised he still had the Hey song. I don't know what that song's called. I don't want to know what that song's called. To me, it's the Hey song. So
the Hey, I think he switched to voices, right before SummerSlam 24, which would have been the, like 6 months later.
Okay.
I think right around
WrestleMania 24.
Did I say SummerSlam 24?
You did say SummerSlam 24. I was confused.
I got SummerSlam on the brain. Leave me alone. No, at WrestleMania 24, the following WrestleMania was right around the time I think he started the.
That sounds about right. Yeah. So it sounds like when he would have gotten the new music right around when he became champion, which would have been October. So, or it would have been in that era when they were kind of repackaged him a little bit. I mean, they were kind of building to that anyway. And, you know, kind of. You know, trying their best to get him to be a main, for people to buy him as like a tippy top guy. So, which I guess they eventually did. So, Cena's t-shirt is black here, which given the colors that he normally has, I thought was notable.
I think they were still trying to not so much acknowledge the fact that the Cena fan base was women and children.
Yeah.
And so it was still, we're still selling black t-shirts with things like Ruck Fools on them. And
yeah.
And
this I believe, at Hustle, Loyalty, and Respect, and it had like some chains around the logo.
Like the chain link fence. Yeah.
Almost like an ECW shirt. But yeah. And he seemed like he mostly got cheers coming out of there were points during the match where Orton had his fans as well. And Ross mentions that Cena has been champ 24 out of 27 months, which is a pretty.
That was during the big Cena run, which he never technically lost the belt on that long reign that he had.
Yeah, would have been like 27 out of 30 by the end of that or something close to that. So that's a pretty, considering the way it bounced around in the years, like in the 99 through 2004 time and the way it's bounced around the last couple of years, they've actually been pretty stable about it since Miz's reign, at least a little bit more so. That's a pretty.
Except for if you don't include last the couple weeks ago with Rey Mysterio. Let's have CM Punk wins.
Yeah.
Then it's vacated. Then Rey Mysterio wins. Then John Cena wins. But now CM Punk's back.
Well, I don't consider. I don't know if I consider that actually part of the lineage. So we'll.
Fair enough.
Whether that that is the case here at this SummerSlam, I guess is the direction probably. But
yeah.
This is Cena and Orton's first one-on-one pay-per-view match. And I think I checked and they had a couple of, you know, Raw matches, but nothing of really of consequence before this. So this is their first big match. You know,
they did a good job of keeping those two apart.
Yeah.
It was just like with Cena and Batista until, I guess that was the next year, right? Was
yeah.
it 08 or 08?
Yeah, that was 08, yeah. Now.
They did a really good job. They do a really good job of keeping guys apart. Until they meet for the first time, and then they do it a lot.
They do. They and Cena and Orton, they have done a lot. So, which is
even funnier because they never really even got to do a rematch because because of Cena's injury. Did they do one rematch or maybe they were gonna go for two? They had the match at Unforgiven after SummerSlam, and then Cena got hurt.
Okay.
Before No Mercy. So.
Okay. Yeah. I don't remember.
So they were gonna do the traditional three matches in a row of what has become WWE's tradition, but
yes.
They didn't get to. And then I think they kept them apart pretty well again. And then 2009 was Randy Orton, John Cena overkill.
Yeah. They of course did the 2008 main, you know, the three way main event in 2008. But
yeah.
So they had some matches there, but 2009 was really the overkill. The match starts off with an extended lockup and Cena working the headlock and getting a headlock takedown. So some wrestling to start off with.
I do feel like this is kind of the headlock match, and I think that's why I might be a little sour on it now.
Okay.
I remember a lot of headlocks in this match.
There were a lot of headlocks, but I will say that I thought there was a lot of uncommon intensity, particularly in Orton's chin locks. Like, Cena was, like, he wasn't just laying there. He was, like, struggling to get up. You could see Orton locking them tightly and Cena fading. And, you know, they had, like, I thought the way they worked the headlocks and the chin locks was uncommonly good. So it didn't bother me that they kept working it because it was kind of part of the story of the match. And I thought that Lawler in particular did a nice job of kind of selling the damage of what, like, the of what they would do, of, like, you know, of tiring him out, of you know, and when later on, like, Orton has a sleeper with the body scissors and you know, kind of talking about, like, you know, yeah, that's, you know, you can't breathe, you're constricted, like talking about, oh, Orton is the boa constrictor kind of thing. I thought that stuff worked.
And maybe it's me being, you know, maybe I'm being the spoiled wrestling fan who can't appreciate old school wrestling anymore. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I need flippy floppy moves all the time.
That's what's happening. Flippy floppy moves.
I do need the flippy floppy moves, but I wonder if, and it's funny with Lawler talking about being the boa constrictor before he became the Viper, which
right.
is kind of funny.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think you make a good point there. So maybe I'll have to reevaluate my thoughts on that.
Well, yeah, maybe it's not a match necessary for everyone, but I liked those little touches. Like, I thought it was a match that did some little things well, and I kind of appreciate those details. Especially given some, you know, got two guys whose work I don't necessarily like. I'm not in love with, you know, Orton or Cena. I mean, they've both had their fair share of good matches, and you know, and there've been times where I've liked them, and there've been times where, you know, Cena has not been fun, and you know, and Orton can be pretty dull. So here, I thought they brought some nice energy to stuff, even if it was mostly their standard stuff.
Fair enough. I think that's fair, and I think a lot of it, you know, they were still relatively new-ish.
Yeah.
The main event scene, not like, you know, I mean, it was at least four years ago now. So
yeah,
that on top of they'd kind of been lingering around the top for 2 years at that
yeah.
point. So
yeah,
it was relatively fresh.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Cena had been in a lot of main events, but Orton was, you know, was still kind of new, and it was 2 years into it rather than 6 years into it for Cena. So yeah, we, you know, he still had bags of tricks that we, you know, maybe hadn't seen or hadn't seen over and over again like we kind of have now. So, so we're working some headlocks. Orton get after they do a break. They do a rope break, and then Orton like grabs on like the headlock right away. Like, I kind of liked that, how he was able to sneak that in on Cena and work that for a bit, then takes down Cena on a shoulder block, where you can really hear the fans be very vocal off of that. And Cena's able to push Orton off the ropes. He tries the STF, but Orton immediately gets to the ropes. I really love, like, he was able to sneak in, like, a really hard punch to, which I'm making the punch motion with my hand, which you can totally see right now. It was just, like, after, like, all that kind of, after all that, you know, basic wrestling stuff, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of it, that punch like had some impact, because it was like, oh yeah, now we're away from the wrestling and this punch, and like it totally took Cena down and, you know, and shook him up a bit, you know, and even got like a pretty, you know, decent reaction when he hit him with it, which I just thought was kind of cool. Like, one punch can do that, you know?
That was cool. And I mean, and that's kind of been WWE style, is very punchy punchy over the last few years. And they managed to, yeah, I mean, they kind of tricked us, because I think we're used to seeing, you know, Cena's definitely a punchy-punchy kind of wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And Orton, he definitely, you know, utilizes the rest holds. He earned the rest hold Randy moniker for a reason. But he usually wears somebody down before those even come into play. So I think it was a different kind of match for those two.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought also Orton's strikes were tighter and crisper and looked better than they normally do. Like, his punches, he had a really nice uppercut, you know, some good stomps. I just kind of thought, like, oh yeah, you know, Orton just seems to, he really seems motivated here to, you know, have a good match, and maybe just the push he was trying to, you know, this is one of his first major, you know, main events. I don't think he'd made it. He hadn't made an event at WrestleMania at this point. I don't think he'd made an event at SummerSlam before. So this is his first, you know, major pay-per-view main event, really.
Yeah, I mean, he really fell by the wayside there after that 2004 title.
Oh, yeah, I guess he, 2004, he was in the main event. That's true. But it had been a while.
Yeah,
that one had been, you know, obviously kind of a failure, so.
Yeah, and it was kind of a, you know, I think they were trying something new with him, you know, and they realized that he wasn't ready for it. But I think Orton's, I think there was definitely, because again, the year before he had all that personal turmoil with the company, which now we know, from his interview, his infamous interview he did where he badmouthed Kelly Kelly, he OD'd. And, so I think he was, I think his head was clear at this point. And he was, intense is a good way to describe him. I think he was genuinely, ready for, to be a, to, I hate to say mature because I don't know the guy, but you know, based on all those interviews from early Randy Orton days, he just didn't really seem like he was mature, for lack of a better term, I guess. And he kind of grew up, and I think he really started to settle into the role of he is a top WWE superstar. And to make it better than his matches he has now, he didn't have to do all the silly snake-like motions that he does now that look ridiculous half the time.
Yeah.
So he could be – I think a lot of that – the looseness of Randy Orton now is him always trying to look like, you know, the slithering snake and stuff like that, which, you know, as much as they try to push it, he's not really that good at, I don't think. But – so I think he could just be just this very angry guy, which I think was the whole point of that – that character then, not I have voices in my head, they make me crazy. He's just, he's angry and bitter, and he has this feeling of self-righteousness. He deserves to be the WWE champion.
Yeah.
And he's angry that he's not. And again, that's why that's, of all the years Orton's been around, that's been the time I enjoy him the most.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So Cena's able to reverse an Irish whip and get a bulldog, but he puts his head down on a backdrop. Then we do a little bit of back and forth, and Cena misses a shoulder block off the ropes to give Orton a little bit of control. Cena gets up on the apron, and then Orton pushes him into the table face first, sort of the Diesel Bret Hart Survivor Series 95 spot, although without the table breaking. But
yeah,
and in an era where table spots were more common than they were in 95, but. Orton drags him in and covers for two, and then we get some more of the chin lock work, which I really liked. Again, the tightness of it. Cena's able to break out of it with a backdrop suplex. I like how the little detail of him clutching his throat, like he's having trouble breathing. He's trying to get that back as he does it. Although he does pop up right away and charges into a corner and misses. So the long term selling has never been Cena's strength.
I get it. I know why people, you know, always mention it. I just feel like I feel like that's who Cena really is. I feel like he is this crazy machine who's like, yeah, that hurts. I'm going to shake it off and I'm going to come right back at you. I don't know. Again, okay. Based off like the guy getting neck surgery and showing up to SmackDown later that afternoon.
Yeah.
That to me, that seems like who Cena is. He's okay. He seems like a really, and I was in a room with him last year for a radio interview. Of course, I didn't get to interview him. I was just there helping somebody. Mm-hmm. But there's something about that guy. He's just intense, and you can feel it even when you're in a room with him. And he is friggin' huge to begin with. And I don't know. Maybe I'm making a justification for poor selling, perhaps. But I just feel like he's one of those guys that he will keep coming at you. He just seems very machine-like.
Okay. He's like that prototype character that was.
I know.
Yeah.
Some guy who played him. I forget.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So there you go. So then we have Orton. He targets Cena's ankle for a little bit. Then he lands the Garvin Stomp, which is my favorite Randy Ortonism. He does steal a lot of moves, but if you're going to steal a move, steal from somebody good like Ron Garvin. So Garvin Stomp.
The sweet Garvin Stomp. And I like that they ever mentioned Cena can't do, back then it was the FU, and he can't do that. He can't pick you up if he can't stand, and he can't really lock in the STFU if he doesn't have his ankle. So
yeah.
little things like that on commentary. JR and King, when they're together, they bounce off each other really, really well, and I'm glad they're back together too.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I hope that lasts obviously, but and they didn't feel the need to, like a lot of times during this era, they would try to throw in somebody with like a third guy, like Coachman or somebody, but it was just Ross and Lawler. So that's usually a better dynamic. So Orton misses a jumping knee drop, but is able to get the power slam off the ropes for two. So, and then locks in the tight chin lock again. which Cena powers out of. He comes off the ropes again, but runs into a really nice dropkick for two by Orton. That was a really well-timed maneuver. So then Orton works a sleeper again, and Cena tries a suplex, but this time Orton's able to get the headlock takeover. So I like how they he tried to do the same thing, but then he had a counter for it this time.
Yeah.
And then wraps the body scissors on the sleeper. Cena tries to grab the ropes. Then he tries to struggle to grab it, lift up his arms. Eventually he lifts them on his back and sends him back into the corner. So the famous Hulk Hogan getting out of the camel clutch spot from the Iron Sheik. So
it never ceases to amaze me when John Cena lifts a man, a full-grown man, larger than your average-sized person, off the ground on his back.
Yes.
I don't care if he's picking up Rey Mysterio out of the STF, or if he's picking up Orton out of a body scissors. Again, going back to the fact that the dude's a freak of nature, it blows my mind every time he does it. I don't care who he's against. Whenever I see him do that, I'm like, this dude is insane.
Yeah, John Cena is a very strong person.
Yes, I think, you know, aside from your Big Shows of the world and your Mark Henry, think he's got to be one of the top three strongest guys in the company.
Yeah, yeah. Well, obviously lifting up the Big Show and Edge at the same time, that's got to be, you know, one of the more impressive things I've ever seen.
Yeah, it always blows my mind when he does that and, you know, lifts up like Viscera or something like that. And then always when he picks somebody up off the ground, I can't even get off the ground at the time. If I'm on the ground, like, well, I'm going to be here for a while. So someone wants to come by and help me up.
Help me
this
up.
Dude's lifting a full grown man on his shoulders.
Yeah.
It's like, oh my God, I am a sad human being.
So Cena punches him down. We get some shoulder blocks and an atomic. Okay, what would you call that? Where he like does like the atomic drop motion, but then he sets him like he, you know, sort of power bombs him. Like it's like a side power bomb thing. Like
what? I think that was his finisher. Talking about the prototype, I think that was his finisher in OVW, and he might have used it. It might have been his finisher before he adopted the attitude adjustment or the FU.
He didn't start
doing that till he feuded with Brock Lesnar in 03.
Okay,
and he had been around for a while at that point. I think it was, I want to say the proto bomb, I think is what it was
proto
called.
Bomb.
When,
okay,
when he was the prototype, but
okay,
it might have been his finisher for a while. I think. I remember watching, it was like an old Velocity match. I forget who the opponent was. It was like one of those things where he fought somebody who's like maybe like an indie darling now or was at the time.
Uh-huh.
And somebody who, you know, like, I can't believe that guy's in WWE. And it's one of those things. Just check it out on YouTube. You can see John Cena versus this guy. You know, one of those things people always tag on Tumblr or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think I remember him winning with the proto bomb.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a Cena Danielson match like that. Is that what you're thinking from Velocity?
I believe that would be the match.
Okay.
I think you're right. Yeah, because okay. It was right when he started doing the rapper thing, but he wasn't wearing the jorts yet. He was wearing like yellow pants.
Okay.
It might have been Danielson. I think that sounds right. And I think he won that match with the spin out powerbomb.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So yeah, because it's like a side powerbomb. It's not like he does it all the time. I just don't know like what I would call it. You know, I call it an atomic bomb, is for like a veteran, because he starts off with the atomic drop position and then sets him off to kind of the side. So anyway, then he does the You Can't See Me, hits the five knuckle shuffle, tries the FU, but Orton gets out of it. Then he hits his inverted backbreaker and the draping DDT for two. And then he does the stalking thing, but he doesn't do like the full on fist pounding crazy thing. Like it's subtle.
He's a while, and I think that's fine. But when he starts getting, I mean, when it's bad enough to throw his shoulder out while doing it, that's pretty bad.
Yes. Yeah. So Cena fends off the RKO, but then charges after Orton, who holds down the ropes, and he goes over holding his hip. And Orton tosses Cena hip first into the stairs. And then Orton lifts Cena into the ring, but only is able to get two. Cena's selling it as if he has died. Then, well, only for a moment, though, because, you know, as we know, Cena is able to, his recovery time from injuries is, it rivals the Wolverine's.
He's like Wolverine, yeah.
Yes, he is, yeah. So he's able to, Cena's able to come back and get a swinging neck breaker off the ropes. He goes to the top. Orton catches him up there. Orton sort of goes in the superplex position, but Cena fights and pushes him off. And I liked how, like, Cena does the super Famaster, and it's, like, perfect because, like, Orton is getting up to, like, his feet and is, like, he's, like, right in the perfect position, and Cena lands it. The timing of that was really good. Yeah, like, a lot of those moves where, like, the guy has to be, like, hunched over for, like, a week in order to do that. And this one, you know, it was, like, the way they did it was really well done.
Yeah, Orton was just getting up, and he was, like, hunched over as he's standing, and Cena drops it right on there. Yeah, it was very
exactly.
Well timed.
Yeah, yeah. He tries the FU, but then Orton holds on to the ropes, and then Orton sets on the apron and drops Cena's neck on the ropes. And then we have another moment of Orton sort of standing over for a while, although in this case he's thinking about the RKO, or at least that's where Lawler sells it, as if he's thinking about the RKO, but then instead he tries to go for the punch. He ends up missing it, though. Cena gets out of the way. Cena locks in the STF, but they're fairly close to the ropes, and Orton stretches over for after a little bit. And then as they both get up, Orton hits the RKO out of nowhere, but then he's holding his knee, so he's a little slow to cover, only gets two.
He didn't hook the leg either.
Gorilla Monsoon would have gotten on him if he had been there. So then Orton lifts him up, and pretty much right away, Cena picks him up for the FU, hits it out of nowhere, and then wins the match. So
yep.
The finish was kind of random. I would kind of wish, I don't know, I kind of wish it had been built to a little bit better. But otherwise, you know, I thought this was a really good match. I was impressed by how much I enjoyed it.
When I was rewatching, I was like, when Orton's right there on the STF, and I know it still wasn't in vogue in 2007 WWE to tap out for anybody. So I think that probably was a big part in it, except for like a big WrestleMania main event when you're in the hold for 4.5 minutes.
Sure.
And I thought it would have been really cool if he would have tapped out right there with just inches away from the ropes, and it would have helped the story going into the next one. Like, oh, I was inches away from getting out of that hold, and then they could have told the story there. Maybe the whole story was seen. They had just done it like a month before with Kali. Cena had made Kali tap out, but he couldn't pin him. Like that, they're like, "Oh, you can't pin me." So then that's where they went. So they probably wouldn't have done that again with Orton. But I thought that would have been kind of cool.
Okay. I can see that. But so, yeah, go ahead.
But yeah, I mean, not a bad match. I don't think I don't have anything against it. I remember the 2000s for the most part. I mean, there are definitely some exceptions. But the 2000s weren't very kind to SummerSlam.
Really? You don't think so?
I mean,
Main events wise, or you mean like in general show?
I think in general there were a lot of shows that were pretty solid, and I think the main events weren't as strong as they could have been, and a lot of them got muddled with and maybe at the time they were a lot better, but looking back, like The Rock versus Booker T was okay. But in retrospect, it's one of those matches that it just bums you out because the invasion was so disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I liked 2002 a lot, but then from 2003 onwards, I just remember a lot of things that really bugged me. Like 2003, like Goldberg should have won that match. And then 2004, Orton winning bummed me out a lot over Benoit, of course, in retrospect now.
Right.
Not so much a big deal. I did like Hogan and Michaels a lot.
I love Hogan and Michaels, yeah.
I do love Hogan and Michaels. And then and then the Edge and John Cena match, not even close to their best stuff the year before.
That was kind of a weak one, yeah.
But and then Orton Cena's fine, but in retrospect now they have so many other matches that I think I would watch before that one.
Okay.
And then it got better in 2008, I think, with Edge and The Undertaker. But it was just from like 2003 to 2007, that show span, it's just kind of a lot of stuff I look back on. Like, I liked it at the time, but in retrospect, it's not really that appealing.
Okay, I see what you mean. Yeah, I mean, individually, I like pretty much all those matches, but I agree that there's like everything has kind of a sense of yeah, that was good, but but they had better options later, or you know that kind of thing.
Exactly. And it's not I'm not crapping on all the SummerSlams of the last 10 years.
Right.
SummerSlam generally, aside from the Rumble and WrestleMania, should be the best pay per view out there. But
sure,
it was just one of those. One of those things I remember when we were talking about doing this series of all the SummerSlam main events, I was like, I remember really liking those matches at the time, but now I'm kind of like, I look back and it's like, there are better options to see this guy versus that guy, or this match led to something really bad. A lot of things like that.
All right. Yeah, that's interesting. I hadn't thought about it, but I would agree with that. So
I will actually say, I think, and again, and this is in retrospect, I wasn't a huge fan of SummerSlam 07 to be at as a whole.
Okay. Yeah, I've never seen the whole show, so this is the only match I've seen from that show, I believe. So I can't really comment on it, but it doesn't really stand out to me as like a awesome, you know, brilliant show. I remember not being excited about Triple H coming back and destroying Booker T.
That was Booker T's exit from the company.
Yeah, which is fine, but you know, yeah. At the time, nothing I'm like excited to see.
I think at the time they weren't 100% sure if Booker was going to leave after that either. There was that wasn't the catalyst for him leaving.
Right.
I don't think, but
yeah. Well, we have, let's see, we have Batista and the Great Khali. We have Beth Phoenix winning a Interpromotional Divas Battle Royal. That did not involve Santino at all. So,
so at least a plus one there.
We have Rey and Chavo. Chavo Guerrero matches after a certain point don't really interest me. Was Rey and Chavo for any reason? Was that still them feuding over Eddie or
So Eddie died in late 05. And then I think Ray and Chavo fought at SummerSlam 06, if I'm not mistaken. I think they did.
Okay.
Because Chavo put him on the shelf.
Yeah. When was that I Quit match?
That I don't remember. Was that on SmackDown or?
That was on SmackDown, but was that 06? Was that late 06?
Maybe, because 06 Chavo and Ray were the opening match of SummerSlam 06, and that was after Ray had returned from injury.
Okay.
And then they wrestled. I honestly have no idea why they wrestled in 2007.
Okay. So yeah, the I Quit match was let's figure this out. He returned at that SummerSlam. That was his ring return from the injury.
Okay.
So he was wrestling Chavo just to get his revenge, I guess, from the I Quit match, I guess. So he was out for a long time because the I Quit match was after No Mercy the year before. So yeah, he was gone.
That's a long ass time to keep a feud going.
Yeah,
but yeah, they sure did.
Uh huh. That's interesting. I completely forgot about that. Wow.
And then Umaga, Carlito, and Mr. Kennedy, which was the battle of we have no idea what to do with you guys right now. So yes. Here you go.
Yeah.
And then and Kane and Finley, which I don't even remember that match happening. So.
No. Well, it was Finley, so I'm sure it was at least okay. But well,
that's true.
And we have John Morrison against CM Punk, which John Morrison. So.
Yeah, even, John Morrison even 2007. CM Punk. I mean.
Well.
Yeah.
John Morrison anytime for me, but
well, fair enough.
Yeah, I like John Morrison is my Randy Orton to you. So, if that makes, I don't know if I said that right, but I think you understand what I'm saying.
I get what you're saying. I think we'll have to discuss that at a future date, though.
Fair enough.
But yeah, I mean, for the most part, you know, I got nothing against Cena and Orton, and but I do feel like SummerSlam 2007 was kind of a low point for SummerSlam in the 2000s.
Yeah.
And
it got better in 08, though. That's a heck of a show.
SummerSlam 08's great. That Undertaker Edge Hell in a Cell, that's the last really good Hell in a Cell match.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's a good times. And Batista and Cena also very good on that show.
That was a hell of a match.
Yeah. And they for whatever reason, they always have great matches. So, yeah. So, yeah, I'll agree with that. I do think in general, SummerSlam main events a lot of times tend to outdo the WrestleMania main events from the same year, which is kind of a weird to think about, but that really has been the case a lot of times. I've noticed. I was surprised when I kind of thought of that. And there aren't really like the bad SummerSlam main events. There's a couple of really bad WrestleMania main events, but there aren't really any horrible, like even like Undertaker versus Undertaker and Mabel versus Diesel are the closest ones, but neither of them are like even nearly as bad as Sid Undertaker or a couple of others that are pretty low on there, in my opinion.
When I was a kid, I loved Undertaker versus Undertaker. I don't care what anybody says. I thought it was awesome when I was a kid.
All right. We liked it better than I would have expected us to like it. So,
Thought the finish was super cool with the kind of the crucifix pose to reverse the tombstone. I always liked that a lot.
Yeah, but the crowd definitely did not care though at all during that.
Oh
match.
No, they did not. I don't know why they had that match follow the cage match. But yeah, Little Razor loves that match. I don't know why it followed the cage match either, which was really weird for WWE at the time because they actually had to assemble the damn cage.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think for the 2000s, I would say 07 is a low point, not because of the main event, but the show in general.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. So, okay. Well, everyone, of course, you can check out Kick Out Wrestling for lots of good wrestling talk and podcasts. And, of course, WrestleSpective.com and FairToFlare.com, continuing with the SummerSlam main event series. Almost finished with it, and only a few more to go before the big show. So keep checking us out. Thanks for listening, and goodbye.
Let's be honest. Most wrestling websites suck. BS rumors, schoolyard gossip, plagiarism. It's no wonder why no one believes anything they read on the internet. Well, if you can't get something done right, you might as well do it yourself. Presenting the Fair to Flare Quarterly from the writers of FairToFlare.com and over a dozen other wrestling websites. We're not copy and pasting what we read in some newsletter. This is 100% original content from the best wrestling bloggers on the internet. In-depth analysis of the art of pro wrestling, debate, artwork, and humor. The Fair to Flare Quarterly will raise the bar of what wrestling journalism can and should be. Professionally edited and produced, and every contributor will be paid for their work. Order your copy of the Fair to Flare Quarterly today at FairToFlare.com. The better wrestling media has arrived.